Ave Maria or visit AveMariaFunds.com. You're listening to Ave Maria Radio, 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit. The FCC requires us to reduce our power at sunset. For those affected by this change, we invite you to listen on the internet at AveMariaRadio.net.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
With the New York Times in one hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
We do not train to be merciful here. Mercy is for the weak.
Pope Francis has declared the year of mercy.
The message of divine mercy is the heart of the gospel.
You said it very well.
ISIS claims they have more terrorists in America.
What you talking about, Willis?
This is not a time to be afraid, though.
If God be for us, who can be against us?
Nobody!
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
What you do is so critically important.
That's a great analysis.
You nailed it.
The force is strong in this one.
It's showtime.
Well, let's start the insanity.
You have proved yourself worthy. Will you join me?
Who's with me? Let's go!
And a good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. I thank you for joining me. We've got another hour here talking about the things that matter most. And in this hour, you're going to meet a remarkable woman, Jeannie Ewing, who's no stranger to suffering. Her family long suffered with bipolar disorder, depression. Her baby daughter, Sarah, born with a rare genetic disorder. Her bones fused together prematurely. She's been through, I think, in her 3 years, I think she's already been through six surgeries. It's an illness that may have anywhere up to 20 to 60 surgeries in her lifetime. That's what's expected. And so you can imagine young parents, she and her husband Ben, shouldering this responsibility as a parent, but also the difficulties in the extended family, different types of illness. And over these many layers of sadness and confusion and anger, Jeannie has responded to the grace of God. And she sees in this a call to transform her life into a radiant solution for suffering. And when we say that, we don't mean suffering dissolves. We mean suffering is made potent. It's made powerful. It achieves the work for which it's intended. And that is probably one of the great contributions of the Catholic faith to human life. Suffering is at the center of human experience. Only Buddhism, among the world's religions, challenges Catholicism on this. We're the only two world religions that make a serious effort to not only explain suffering, but deal with it. And we deal with it through the crucifixion of the Son of God and his resurrection and the promise of eternal personal union with God. Buddhism deals with it through a series of reincarnations where you balance the law of karma and eventually enter a state of nirvana or the abolition of the person, the state of perfect nothingness. We're going to learn today the Catholic approach to dealing with suffering. And Jeannie's going to take us on a journey from grief to grace and from tragedy to triumph. But first, let's get to the news headlines.
Thank you very much, Al. Welcome, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Friday, November 25th. It is the Feast of St. Catherine of Alexandria, and today's news is brought to you in part by the Ave Maria Family of Funds at AveMariaFunds.com. The European Commission has pledged help to rebuild the historic Basilica of St. Benedict in Norcia that was virtually destroyed last month by earthquakes. Jean-Claude Juncker, president of the European Commission, said, quote, "It's right that the European Commission takes responsibility for the beautiful cathedral of Norcia," end quote. Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi has also promised the government's help with reconstruction costs. A new report shows that millions of Americans struggle with hunger. Sarah Lee Kessler reports.
Asma Latif says her Bread for the World report shows there are hungry Americans all around us.
More than 42 million Americans struggle with hunger, including 13 million children. That's one in six children in the United States struggle with hunger.
Latif says most of the hungry people in this country work but can't afford to feed their families after paying for fixed expenses like rent and utilities. Sarah Lee Kessler, NBC News Radio, New York.
The Chaldean Catholic Bishop of Detroit has called upon Catholics in the U.S. and other Western nations to adopt parishes, adopt dioceses, and adopt people in order to let the people know that they are thinking of them and praying for them and thanking them for keeping the faith alive. Calling for prayer and advocacy, Bishop Frank Calabat was born in Kuwait and asked U.S. Christians to speak up all the time on behalf of the Middle East Christians who are suffering greatly from the effects of the 2011 Arab Spring. He added, quote, "If that is the spring, I would hate to see the winter," end quote. Cardinal Timothy Dolan of New York, the chairman of the USCCB's Committee on Pro-Life Activities, has called upon Catholics to oppose a physician-assisted suicide with renewed vigor in light of legislative gains by proponents. In his statement, he said, quote, "The act of prescribing a fatal, poisonous dose undermines the very heart of medicine. Doctors vow to do no harm, and yet assisted suicide is the ultimate abandonment of their patients," end quote. And the Dicastery for Laity, the Family, and Life has announced that the 2019 theme of World Youth Day, which will take place in Panama, will be, "I am the servant of the Lord. May it be done unto me according to your word." The themes for the 2017 and 2018 World Youth Days held at the local level are, "The Mighty One has done great things for me, and holy is his name," as well as, "Do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God." 2 years after the sound of church bells was replaced by the sound of explosives in Bashika, Iraq, just north of Mosul, Christians are again celebrating Mass after forcing the Islamic State out of their homeland. Christian liturgies have been celebrated yet again in the church of Mar Korkis after Bashika was taken back by Kurdish Peshmerga fighters on November 7th. The event marked the first time that Christian liturgies were permitted in the town since it was seized by the Islamic State in 2014. The leader of the Russian Orthodox Church has vowed that Moscow's Patriot will never accept the independence of the Orthodox Church in Ukraine. During a celebration of his 70th birthday, Patriarch Kirill said, quote, "We will never agree to a change of the holy canonical borders of our church because Kiev is the spiritual cradle of Holy Russia." Other Russian Orthodox officials applauded vigorously as Patriarch Kirill spoke of the painful ulcer of Ukrainian division. And now your fascinating fact for the day. Black Friday is not the only busiest shopping day of the year. It's also the busiest day of the year for plumbers. For Ave Maria Radio News, I'm Nick Tom.
And a good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. Jeannie Ewing's no stranger to suffering. Her family has long struggled with bipolar disorder, depression. Her baby daughter was born with a rare genetic disorder that caused her bones to fuse together prematurely. And yet, despite the many layers of sadness, loss, confusion, and anger, Jeannie responded to God's calling and transformed her life into one with profound purpose and joy. She's the author of From Grief to Grace, The Journey from Tragedy to Triumph. Jeannie, good to have you with me. Thanks.
Hi. Thanks for having me, Al.
When you seem to have your more than your fair share of unexpected suffering in life. Talk to me, first of all, about your family's history with depression and bipolar disorder.
Well, first, I think we all have different process. So I don't look at my life as having more than my fair share. I think it's a lot, but there are a lot of people that have less to deal with than we do, and some have more. But I just think that God tailors our cross to the journey, our personal journey to sanctification. So that helps me not to compare myself or contrast myself to other people.
Yeah.
But in terms of my family history, so the first thing that actually manifested in my family was OCD.
Okay.
So when my brother was about 10 years old, he started repeating certain phrases over and over again. It was very rhythmic and bizarre patterns, and nobody in my family knew what it was. And so I hate to say this, but I'm just going to be honest. We teased him about it and made fun of him a little bit.
Sure you
and
did.
Then my mom found out serendipitously, it must have been divine providence, she found a doctor, a psychologist who specialized in OCD, and she took my brother in and he was tested and diagnosed. At that point, she realized she also had OCD, and she had been silently suffering from that
really?
For decades.
Huh.
Well, and the way my mom explained it to me, it was like obsessive thoughts. And let's just say, this, I'm just making this up, but let's just say that something like somebody would walk in the room and she'd see that they had a pearl necklace on, and
yes.
the thought would come to her mind to just pull the necklace off and strangle the person. It would be over and over and over. So the reason she never said anything growing up was she was terrified of being institutionalized,
yes.
which in the 60s would have been a high likelihood. So she just internalized all of this, and she just suffered the torment for years, for decades. And so she and my brother actually, this was a huge breakthrough in our family. She and my brother both got help. And then it was in my brother's teen years, so he's younger than I am, that the bipolar became manifested. And that was really horrible because it was due to the onset of puberty, and then you've got this extreme highs and lows of the mania and depression on top of hormones, and it was crazy.
Yeah.
So that was tough because there was this volatility in our home all the time, and I was always walking on pins and needles, and I felt like, I don't know if my brother's going to explode today or not. He was very violent at times, so I stayed in my room a lot. And then my mother also was diagnosed later with depression. We also have bipolar disorder in extended family members and depression as well.
What happened with your brother when he was 10, that he was first regarded as being odd and probably irritating before you discovered it was OCD. How long did that period go on where you basically thought he was being a pain in the neck?
It was probably a year or two.
Yeah, yeah. I've had a different illness, but a similar problem in my family too. Thinking that a behavior that was related to mental disorder was in fact willed and indulged in by a family member, and that's terrible to think about. You know. How's he doing now?
Well, you know, a lot of people that have psychological diagnoses also have a high comorbidity with substance abuse.
Yep.
So my brother also struggles with addiction and alcoholism.
Yep.
He's been in recovery off and on for several years, but it's a bumpy road. So the way that my family and I answer that question is it's just one day at a time.
Yeah.
So today it's not such a great day from what my mom told me, but there have been periods of time, even years, where my brother's really been in a season of kind of a plateau, and he's just kind of coasting along pretty well.
Yeah. I know. Again, we've had substance abuse in my family as well, and it's, you know, you wonder, some of these things are so tied together, and I'm almost certain within a generation we're going to know a whole lot more about brain chemistry and be able to come up with ways of helping people so they don't feel compelled to do self-medication like this. How old's your brother now?
Yeah, that would be awesome if that actually happened. He's 33.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, let's continue on here because now, you have your own, as you get older and have your own family, you have a baby daughter who's born with a rare genetic disorder. Talk to us mm-hmm. about that.
Well, we had no idea prenatally that anything was, quote, wrong. And I had a really normal pregnancy. I was really happy. They were great 9 months, 10 months. And my ultrasounds were normal. It wasn't until her actual birth that it was just drama unfolded. And that in and of itself is quite a dramatic story that I do tell in my book mm-hmm. where the doctor that was on call the night that I delivered Sarah was not my primary care physician. And she said to me after the birth that everybody could tell who was in the OR that night, that there was a divine presence in the room. And she said wow. she actually felt like it was God's hand himself who wow. delivered Sarah from me
wow.
when I had a C-section. Yeah, and this was a woman who didn't know me, and this is in the medical industry, you know, so this is...
Where they tend to shy away from statements like that.
Exactly, exactly. So she was very confident in saying this to me, and she either didn't care or knew that we wouldn't be offended by it. That in and of itself spoke a lot to me. She was very convicted in what she said that day. And so Sarah's condition is called Apert syndrome. We had never heard of it before she was diagnosed. Apert syndrome, the characteristics are the fusion of fingers and toes and also one or more cranial plates are fused. And so they have to be surgically separated. They also have pretty much every system in the body can be affected by Apert. So a lot of people that have kids with Apert, they have trachs, they have heart conditions, vision problems, hearing problems, skin issues. They need lots of therapy, physical and occupational therapy. So they tend to have between 20 and 60 surgeries.
When do you figure out that there's something wrong? I mean, how long does it take?
Well, you know, in the hospital, we live in a pretty rural area, but there was still speculation that this is what she had. It wasn't until we took her to a geneticist out of town who confirmed the diagnosis through blood tests.
I see. Did the diagnosis begin, though, at birth? I mean,
we just presumed that the doctors that speculated this is what it was based on the visual characteristics of what
okay.
she had. That's when we just kind of proceeded forward and decided to be proactive in her treatment.
Gotcha. Okay. Is she your first child?
No, we have an older daughter.
Okay. And how many years had you been married before she was born?
Sarah, well, let's see. 2007 through 2013, 6 years.
Okay, so you've been married a while. I was just mm-hmm. wondering if it was, you know, oftentimes if you're raised in a home where there's significant suffering, then marriage is often a way out.
Mm.
And I'm just wondering if that you had that kind of experience. But we'll come back on the other side of the break and continue the conversation. My guest, Jeannie Ewing, is the author of From Grief to Grace. It's an incredible journey from tragedy to triumph. And we're going to continue. It's a fascinating story. And learning joy in the midst of suffering can be a real...
As we travel the beautiful roads of Michigan during these glorious fall days, we are reminded of why we choose to live in Michigan. Hi, I'm Dan Hall from Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. And speaking of living, during our Black Friday sales event, you can now lease a new Dodge Journey or Charger, Jeep Cherokee or Renegade, or Chrysler Pacifica or 300, all starting from $198 a month. These are world-class in safety and styling and can be found right here in your own backyard, only at Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, or visit us online at PinckneyChrysler.com.
My dad, sharp as a tack, but getting him out for a dentist trip got harder every year. When he moved to the senior residence where he lives now, Dr. Mansour's portable dental service was a godsend. Dr. Mansour comes to wherever the homebound patient may be, whether in a nursing facility or the comfort of home. All the services you'd expect in a dentist office brought straight to the patient's door. Call 586-873-5567. That's 586-873-5567 or portabledentalservices.com.
All are welcome to celebrate Father Solanus Casey's 146th birthday on Sunday, November 27th. A special noon mass will be offered in the St. Bonaventure Monastery Chapel at 1780 Mount Elliott in Detroit, with refreshments and fellowship afterward in the dining room of the Solanas Casey Center. Secured parking is available. Call 313-579-2100 for more information. That's 313-579-2100.
Now, in the Ave Maria online store, two brilliant talks on Advent by Father John Ricardo. In The Mystery of Advent, Father John dives into Scripture to regain the wonder we should experience during this season. In Advent Confession, Father John helps us prepare for the Nativity of the Lord through the story of the prodigal son. Order both talks now by going to AveMariaRadio.net and clicking on Advent Talks under the Store tab. It's a great gift that will help you and your loved ones enter into the mystery and mercy of Advent. Today's programming on 990 WDEO is made possible in part by a gift made from our day sponsor. To celebrate the 51st wedding anniversary of Bob and Marilyn Smoltz. They were childhood sweethearts and were married at St. Thomas More in Troy on Thanksgiving Day. Marilyn says, "I pick the right guy." If you want to be a day sponsor and or want to say a message for a loved one or friend, call 877-288-1077.
Here's a Family Minute with child psychologist Dr. Ray Guarendi from Ave Maria Radio.
Is discipline kind? I feel like I'm nagging you because I've asked that question five times. And this is the fifth reason I'm going to give you why discipline is ultimately kind. Routinely, parents will walk into my office and say, "My child has a poor self-image." Why is that? At the basis of many, if not most, of these poor self-images is an undisciplined child. Undisciplined people smack up against the world. They smack up against other people. They create friction with other people. And they realize that other people do not like to be around them. Their peers, maybe a Sunday school teacher, other adults in the family. Even grandma can be pushed to her limit by this child. So what happens to a self-image? It gets battered. It gets bruised. It gets knocked around. Discipline is kind because it teaches a child you have to control your behavior around other people. And ultimately, your self-image will not go into tatters because other people are giving you messages, "We don't like you, son." Discipline is kind. It ultimately leads to a good self-image. I'm Dr. Ray.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. With me, Jeannie Ewing. She is the author of From Grief to Grace. It's a powerful story of her own journey from tragedy to trauma. It's a story about redemptive suffering. And I think this is, if the Catholic faith is, it's distinct in many ways from other Christian traditions, but one of the key elements within Catholicism that I think elicits more praise than maybe some of its other aspects is this ability to lend meaning to suffering, and also not just meaning, but also empowerment through suffering, with an expectation that, like Jesus, we can endure the cross for the joy set before us. And Jeannie's story is certainly a great testimony to that capacity. When you got married, I want to come back to that question I was playing with at the end of the last segment. When you got married, Jeannie, was that a way, were you hoping now as you begin your life with your husband, the new household, was that perceived as a way of avoiding or escaping the suffering that you had been experiencing in your family's home?
That's a really insightful question. I don't think anyone's ever asked me that before. I guess if I were to answer instinctively, maybe. I sure. Can't really say definitively on the spot without really taking some time to think about that, but it very well could have been. I mean, I lived at home all the way up until I was married because mm-hmm. I commuted to college and graduate school, and my brother had been in and out of the home that time. So the dynamic was similar, whether he was there or not, just because I was still, quote, the child, the adult child at home.
Right.
So part of me, when we did get married, I did have this idyllic view of marriage and family,
sure,
and what our life would be like. So I had,
yeah,
no idea that any, yeah, of this was even a possibility.
Yeah, I know that. I think I get, the reason I ask the question is because I think a lot of us have that sense when we do get married that we're going to build in a different way, or we're going to have a chance to start over again or be free from any encumbrances that we may have had at home. Even if we had a good home,
mm-hmm,
but at the same time in some ways burdensome. You had training in psychology and counseling, as well as this real life experience that you had. Have you found that your training has helped you?
Yes. So actually, I was specifically a school counselor, and most school counselors deal more heavily with academic,
mm-hmm, okay,
training and, guiding the child with a career path and things like that. I actually had a very rare opportunity as an intern to do a grief group. And I remembered this when I was writing the book because I thought, God is so amazing how he connects all these details that something,
yeah,
I had forgotten. And so when I was an intern, there was an unusual number of deaths at the school where I was placed.
Mm-hmm.
There were two suicides of swim coaches.
Wow.
It was kind of a Romeo and Juliet thing that happened. And that was devastating, so one after the other. Then there was, I think, a student that was shot in a gang brawl. There were a couple of kids who had lost their own children from SIDS. There was,
wow,
another student, her dad died of a heart attack during one of her swim meets. I mean, it was like, there was just, it kept coming and coming. And so my on-site supervisor said, I don't have time to deal with this. Why don't you do something with this, Jeannie? And I was like, I don't know what to do. But it really, I mean, this was exactly how God used that opportunity to blend my professional training in counseling with grief.
Yes.
So, and leading these teens on their own journey, I realized what a delicate and unique journey it is for everybody.
Mm.
And then I had to really approach it that way instead of these canned responses or,
yeah,
guiding them as a group. I really had to do some individual work with them too.
Yes. Now, was this a public school or a parochial school?
It was a really big public school.
Yeah, okay. Now, as a Catholic, you have encountered Jesus, and you know how to unite your sufferings with him, or at least know that you should try to unite your sufferings with him.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's difficult. But how did that help? How were you able to use those resources in a public setting?
Well, I think because I knew that it wasn't wrong for me to talk about God,
mm-hmm,
that I wasn't afraid to mention, what are your thoughts about life and death and the afterlife and,
very good,
and God? Who is God to you, and how are you feeling towards God right now? So we did like a letter to God, and this was all in a public school, and I felt perfectly protected and safe to do this because,
beautiful,
most of these kids, they're longing for that. They're thirsting for that. And they will make that known to you as a counselor. So they would give me hints sometimes that they wanted to open that door. And so that's why I felt like, okay, this is God's nudging. It's the Holy Spirit, and it's time. And so there were often very fruitful and spiritually healing conversations that happened as a result of that. One girl I actually ended up giving a miraculous medal to. This was at a public school. But I found out after these conversations that she was Catholic.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
I guess her parents had fallen away from the faith, but she was so drawn to the faith that I shared with her after she showed an interest that's what happened. So
beautiful. Mm. See, I love that. I'm so glad that you felt the freedom to do that. I want to encourage people not to feel intimidated, but to go ahead and to be prudent, but to be free as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, talk to me about your own experience in terms of taking suffering and uniting it with Christ. I'll just mention, I had necrotizing fasciitis back in 2003, had my left leg amputated, and I spent a lot of time trying to do this myself, none too successfully, I would say. But so I'm always interested to know, hear from people who take their faith seriously and who are, you know, understand the benefit of uniting one's sufferings and offering them up. So tell us a little bit about your own experience here, the spiritual benefits of.
Sure. So that it's also, I want to make sure that everyone knows it's a process. So even though I talk about this as if it's a step-by-step and you get to a certain place and it's just done and you're in this place of being able to surrender all of your pain and all of your anguish to God all the time, it's not really like that.
Right.
It's kind of a
right.
messy process. So, I mean, that's the reality of it. So
yes.
I think we have to, people can say to us, offer it up, which has become kind of a Catholic cliche.
Sure.
To those of us
sure.
that, you know, I was raised Catholic, I heard this my whole life. But most of us might do it kind of half-heartedly or begrudgingly. And when it's really done well, when we suffer well, we learn to suffer well, it really is a journey that involves a daily surrender to whatever the Lord perfectly and permissively wills for our lives. So, for instance, yesterday I had a complete wrench thrown in my day. I had this beautiful day planned out. My girls were in a really great mood. They were getting along really well. It was a beautiful day. And I thought, this will be perfect. We'll have a nice day together. And then I get this phone call from the Medicaid office that Sarah, my younger daughter, her waiver was going to be denied if we didn't fill out, you know, every detail of our financial life. And so I went through, it was like this nightmare. So I'm using this as an illustration to you and your listeners to understand that I had to really stop myself because I was getting very angry, and I was shaking, and all this anxiety was swelling up in me, and I just felt suffocated for a time, maybe an hour. And at one point, I had to just take a deep breath and breathe, and I was swimming in all this paperwork, and I just said, you know what, I'm going to reach out to my prayer warriors and ask them to pray for me because I'm in a really, really bad place right now. And then I also just, I have a crucifix in every room of the house, and that's really kind of my focal point when I'm in this place where I just feel completely lost, confused, just swimming in this darkness. Yeah. And then I remember to pray, all right, Lord, you have a plan in all of this. This is not what I wanted to do today. This is not what I wanted to go through. Just give me the grace to do it and to be able to do this well. So whether that requires my patience with the woman on the phone, which it did, whether that requires charity, which it also did, and those were not things that were coming easily to me at that moment. I was very enraged. So it really requires a daily, sometimes moment-to-moment surrender of our will, what we're attached to, what we would like to happen. We have to surrender or abandon that into the arms of Jesus on the cross. Mm-hmm. And then we allow him to take our pain, and then he transforms it into love.
Yeah.
So he doesn't necessarily take away the chronic illness, the mental illness, the genetic condition, whatever that pain or that wound is. He doesn't necessarily stop the hurt, but he'll change it into something more. And that's what you're talking about with redemptive suffering and the beauty and the gift of the cross.
Yes, yes. I think that in my case, it was necessary to make sure it was, I did this every day. My wife would join me at the hospital. We actually had a little ritual we would go through to act it out because I found it so difficult to sustain my attention through the day. I'd start in prayer, and 30 seconds later, I was gone. You know, my mind was off somewhere else. I'd wrenched back. And so I found it important. And you mentioned having others pray for you. That was one of the two or three most important things for me, to know that even when I wasn't able to carry myself, there were others who were lifting me up. I felt often like the paralytic in John chapter 2, whose friends lowered him through the roof into the presence of Jesus. I felt I was being lifted up into the presence of Jesus. And that, the fidelity of friends and actually many listeners who joined and supported me during that time was extraordinarily important. So I definitely get that. I'd like to know, how's your husband play into this with you?
I love it when people ask me that, because I actually included a reflection he wrote about, it's called A Father's Perspective on Apert Syndrome. Mm-hmm. So I included that in my book. Ben and I were talking, I don't know, fairly early on after Sarah was born, and we agreed that men and women deal with grief very differently.
Yeah.
He expressed to me that as the head of the household, he felt like he had to kind of hold it all in all the time.
So let's hold it in right now, because we've got a break, and we'll pick it up on the other side of the break, all right? My guest, the Jeannie Ewing, her book, From Grief to Grace, The Journey from Tragedy to Triumph. Again, this is where our faith and our theology and our doctrine really comes into play. It, how we live is determines whether we're a window on the kingdom or not.
Weingartz, everything from lawn to snow.
Hi, it's Dan Weingartz. Stay ahead of winter storms with one of our in-stock Toro snowblowers. Toro snowblowers are strong and reliable and clear down to the pavement. And with prices starting at just $359, we have a Toro to fit every budget. For more information, visit Weingartz.com or our stores in Utica, Farmington Hills, Cedar Springs, Clarkston, and Ann Arbor.
Weingartz, everything from lawn to snow.
Hi, this is Reno Frazita with Smart Money Financial. Are you ready to retire but just need a clear picture of the road going forward? That's my specialty, and I've been teaching Ave Maria listeners to retire confidently a lot lately. If you're ready to do the same, your mission, if you choose to accept it, is to craft your own retirement plan alongside me within 6 weeks so you can be totally clear on how to have the income that you'll need to live the way you want to when you retire instead of worrying. For a flat fee of only $750, you'll work with me one-on-one to understand and organize several aspects about your retirement, from the income planning to managing investment risks to reducing fees and getting insurance, as well as other topics that might pertain to you. Now, this rate is significantly discounted from my normal fees, and I can only keep it going for a short time. So give me a call today at 248-468-4401 or contact me at smartmoneyvillage.com.
Advisory services offered through Prosperity Capital Advisors, a registered investment advisor.
Cresta in the Afternoon is brought to you in part with the generous support of MonasteryGreetings.com. MonasteryGreetings.com features hundreds of food and gifts made by abbeys, convents, and monasteries. Fruitcakes, jams and jellies, cakes and cookies, coffee, tea and honey, chocolate and fudge, all from monks and nuns. MonasteryGreetings.com also has a selection of jewelry, candles, soap, and body care items. Hundreds of Christmas gift ideas online or by catalog. Support of religious life all through MonasteryGreetings.com. That's MonasteryGreetings.com.
You can learn a lot about a university when you see what stands at its center. At the heart of Franciscan University of Steubenville stands Christ the King Chapel. Jesus is at the center of our spiritual life, campus community, athletics, and our academic community, where professors help students develop a passion for knowledge and truth. Discover a university that is academically excellent and passionately Catholic. Discover Franciscan University of Steubenville. Find out more at franciscan.edu.
This is Lewis Brown, director of CMF Curo, a Catholic healthcare ministry that provides an affordable Catholic healthcare option nationwide. We have come to a unique time in our history. Healthcare costs are rising, and our religious freedom is being challenged. CMF Curo empowers you to live the new evangelization in your healthcare. Visit our website for more information about CMF Curo. Go to cmfcuro.com. That's cmfcuro.com. Christian caring, Christian sharing.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchak.
We're told that money can't buy happiness, and that's largely true. But new research from the Harvard Business School shows that what we do spend our money on can actually boost how happy we feel. It turns out spending money on ourselves or buying things, even fun things, doesn't really do much to make us happier. But when we use our money to invest in others, by giving to a charity, helping a stranger, or even buying our friend lunch, we experience a lift. Our Catholic faith tells us that we're stewards of the gifts God's given us, and that being a good steward means sharing what we have. I guess it shouldn't come as too big a surprise to know that when we follow God's will for our lives and our money, He gives us the grace to be happier. Would you like to be happier today? Find someone you can invest in and be generous. You'll be happy you did. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. With me, Jeannie Ewing, sharing her story of family tragedy. And again, the relationship between suffering and Christ's redemptive work. We were talking at the close of last break about your husband's approach on this, and you were making a point, which I've heard made by many, many people, that husbands and wives, men and women, process grief and deal with it differently. So pick it up from there, if you would, Jeannie.
Yeah, so Ben and I were just talking early on after Sarah was born about this, because he said he just felt the pressure as the head of the household to kind of internalize his sorrow and that loss and that void that he felt, because he wanted to be strong for me and for the girls.
Yeah.
And so in this sharing, it was very beautiful, because the Lord worked in that conversation so that my husband felt safe enough to allow himself to cry, to sob, to be really honest with me about this. And I said, you know what, we're in this together. I totally understand why you feel like you have to shoulder this burden, but it's really important for you to know that we're both here for each other, and I want you to feel okay to come to me and cry if you have to, or get mad and scream. It's okay. Mm-hmm. And so after this conversation, Ben and I really thought it might be really important for him to share his perspective, what it's like as a man to grieve.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Men don't usually think it's acceptable to cry or to get really angry and scream about something or to feel really frustrated. It's like these negative emotions in our society, and usually in our families of origin too, we are told, at least men are told, to suppress those. And that's kind of what Ben learned growing up. So he felt that by sharing his perspective and what it was like to experience grief and loss, that maybe it would give other men permission to open up and share also.
Yes, yes. I remember one of the first times I did any pastoral counseling, this is many, many years ago, before I returned to the Catholic Church, I was a couple who had lost a six-year-old daughter, and they actually taught me a great deal because they did grieve so differently. And I learned at that time that many parents who lose a child end up divorcing down the road. The majority of them do.
Yes.
And this couple didn't, but it came awfully close, and it wasn't until, in this case, the wife realized that her husband was, in fact, as grieved, as pained, was in as much suffering as she was. It's just he showed it in an entirely different way. But they went on. They're doing very well now. Lovely family. But that was an early lesson for me, that men and women do suffer and process grief differently.
Yeah, and actually, couples that have kids with special needs, like we have an 80% divorce rate.
It is that. I knew it was higher. I didn't know it was that high. Wow.
Yeah, and so, you know, with Ben and I going into this when Sarah was born, we knew we had to really stay on top of caring for our marriage, which has been hard. It's really tough because of the very reason you state, that sometimes Ben is pulling away, or maybe he's expressing his grief differently than how I would. I'm a very open person. I just talk about it when I'm upset.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Sometimes, you know, it's just different for men and women. So we just have to find that balance to help each other.
You write about the divine mercy in the midst of suffering here. Can you elaborate a little bit, this being the year of mercy?
Yeah, I thought that was pretty appropriate, the timing of that.
Yeah.
Well, so often when we are in the throes of grief, people tell us to, A, get over it.
Yeah.
Or, well, it's been, let's just fill in the blank, you know, 6 months or a year, let's time to move on, or time heals all wounds, these cliches. And so then we often feel ashamed if we're not, quote, over it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we might get mad at ourselves if we're still grieving over a person who died, or an illness, a chronic illness, or an accident that happened, or whatever it is. And what I talk about in the chapter of Divine Mercy is, A, it's very important for us to be kind to ourselves, meaning merciful. We
mm-hmm.
need to really give ourselves that space to process our feelings and to allow ourselves to to feel the pain. And B, we also have to enter and hand over our wounds. This is kind of what we were talking about earlier. And I specifically mention in the sacrament of confession, of reconciliation. That's the sacrament of mercy.
Yes.
And so that's really been the one sacrament, of course, in addition to the Holy Mass and receiving the Eucharist, that has kept my faith alive, that's kept my husband's faith alive and our marriage alive. Because when we are, maybe we have like a really big argument because we're both very emotionally drained after a surgery that my daughter had. She's had six of them. And we'll go to confession. We run to the confessional. We take our family. One of us watches the girls. The other one goes to confession. And it's like that is the place where we are able to just basically dump all of our mess into the arms of Christ through the priest, and then we receive that healing, that divine mercy through the absolution and through our penance. And it's just truly, it is miraculous, the way that those sacraments combined, Eucharist and reconciliation, really do heal our hearts and help us in that journey of grief.
Beautiful. I'm wondering, your daughter is Sarah, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your younger daughter. How old is she now?
Three.
She's three, okay. Now, what kind of medical future do you foresee for her?
Well, people with APERT have between 20 and 60 surgeries in their lifetime. Sarah has had six. They're with APERT, there really aren't a lot of statistics about prognosis, mortality rates, life expectancy. So we are fully aware that new medical issues could emerge as she gets older.
Yes.
And so there are many different ways that this could happen. I have a friend who has a son with APERT. They have very uniquely shaped feet. Well, that can affect their balance, their walking. And then her son specifically has had to have hip surgeries because of his feet, the way they're shaped. And so this is something that's a possibility for Sarah. It may or may not happen. We just, again, this is why in my book I talk so much about the importance for abandonment to divine providence and living in the present moment and really being allowing God to meet us there so that we're not fretting over what might happen or the what ifs. We're not worrying about what happened in the past either.
Let me ask then, do you feel deprived of being able to dream about a future where you're not so, quote, burdened?
Sometimes.
Yeah,
that's a very poignant question. Ben and I have expressed that to each other at times, especially when we're with other friends that have typical children, typical lives. There is a sense of loss there too, because there's a loss in the relationship. Our life is so different. We face life and death on a daily basis. It's always in the back of our minds.
Right.
And yet, you know, when we get together at barbecues or something, now that it's summertime and people are so carefree and they're talking about their vacations and, you know, going camping and stuff, there is a sadness that Ben and I feel that we, just yesterday Ben said, you know, I don't know, there might be things that I'm able to teach Felicity, our older daughter, how to do that Sarah may not physically be capable of learning how to do. Just fun recreational things, going fishing, going bike riding, because she has short arms and her bones are fused in her fingers. And so there are things that we have to think about that sometimes does feel like a deprivation. But then at the same time, it's like the Lord gives us these, sometimes they're fleeting moments of grace, where we really see the joy and the beauty and the gift of what he's doing in our family and what he's doing with Sarah and with our daughters together. And so we have something that other people don't necessarily have in that, but it's still hard to live in the world in the midst of the majority of the mentality that people have of having a normal life.
Yeah. And American culture really is built around the idea that you can pretty much, American culture encourages extravagant expectations about what the world has for you and of your ability to shape and your future.
Yes.
And And I that's just part of living in America, the idea that somehow you're an autonomous person and ideally you should have not be bounded by anything. You shouldn't be bounded by tradition. You shouldn't be bounded by lack. And I think for people who have anything from whether it's permanent disfigurement or a handicap or disability or are responsible for the care of very ill people, I think they don't, they aren't, in one way they're not as easily snookered into having those extravagant expectations, but at other times it can be discouraging. But you mentioned those moments of grace. Do those come as kind of pangs of joy, or are they sustained experiences?
That's pangs of joy. That's a good description. I've never thought of it that way, but that is exactly what it feels like.
They
always come unexpectedly.
Yes.
And
you can't
turn
them on.
But it's always when we need it the most, too. So, we still have the temptation towards the American dream, so to speak.
Sure.
We always have that temptation. Sometimes it's stronger than at other times. But at the same time, Ben and I feel like we have a gift and a specific calling because we understand the human condition. We understand suffering.
That's right.
Because of our own suffering, we are better able than some people that maybe run away from their suffering or they distract themselves with busyness, that we're able to walk with someone else in their own pain when they often maybe feel abandoned alone in their journey. And we are able to, there are many people that come to us even for that reason because they say, well, I don't want to burden you with this because I know you have XYZ with Sarah, but, and we say, no, please do. It's not a burden.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, it sounds as though you and Ben are doing a remarkable job here. And I love the way your faith is so well integrated into what you're doing. I think it is a model for us, an encouragement, I think, to all of us. I hope you and I can talk again about this. I'd like to be able to call on you now and then to discuss matters
That'd
of
be
this
awesome.
Sort. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Jeannie, the book, again, is called From Grief to Grace. It's available, I'm sure, Amazon, or we have it in our bookstore as well. So I would urge people to get it. Thank you. Jeannie Ewing, From Grief to Grace, The Journey from Tragedy to Triumph.
Cresta in the Afternoon is brought to you in part by the Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The Ave Maria Mutual Funds offer equity and fixed income mutual funds that can combat today's low interest rates that harm many long-term investment plans. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Their portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. To learn more, the number is toll-free, 1-866-AVE-MARIA, or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Who's the head of your home and family? Is it Jesus Christ? Call the Men of Sacred Hearts to show you how to place Jesus as the head of your family and show you how to use the Holy Rosary to learn what is on your child's heart that they're not telling you. Watch one mom's testimonial on our webpage, menofthesacredhearts.org, and call us to set up your appointment today, 586-264-8550. This message is brought to you by Office Express. Let's all support each other. OEXUSA.com.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten in part by Charity Mobile. Communication is critical. And in today's world, your cellular service is your lifeline to family and friends. Ave Maria Radio and Charity Mobile are partners in communicating the most important message of all, the good news of Jesus Christ. Charity Mobile is a provider of cellular LTE phones and service and has been a proud supporter of Ave Maria Radio and other pro-life causes for more than 10 years. More information at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile. Charity begins at phone.
Every day, Catholic Charities of Southeast Michigan see the face of Christ in those they serve. They feed the hungry, care for adults who can't be left alone, give strength to those fighting addiction, and help mothers embrace and give life to their unborn children.
Parishes are now conducting second collections to support Catholic charities of Southeast Michigan and those they serve. Please be generous. Learn more and donate online by visiting ccsem.org. Providing help, giving hope.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. Well, this is... People misunderstand when I say this, but I'll say it anyways. Suffering is the... Our response to suffering is the strongest argument for the truth of the Catholic faith. Christianity... The only other world religion that takes suffering as seriously as Catholicism is Buddhism. Buddhism understands that all of human life is a function of suffering. And in Buddhism, you try to escape it through many reincarnations. And you want to escape the cycle of karma that keeps you tied to this world. You want to enter the state of perfect nothingness, nirvana. We don't approach suffering that way. We put it right at the center of human experience. That's why we have a crucifix centered in our many of our churches. The crucified Christ is the statement that God himself knows that suffering is part of the human condition, and he's willing to bear it along with us. Not just put up with it with us, but actually use it to make us the people he originally intended us to be. And that's what resurrection is about. So the suffering is there as the gateway, the way into the fullness of life, abundant life, resurrected life, glorified life. And we do it not through some sort of impersonal law of karma where we write all the scales. We do it through the personal work of our Redeemer and our Savior. We don't lose our identity in this process. We become more who God originally created us to be. But suffering
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. The executive producer is Nick Tom. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMaria Radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506. Or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506. Or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
Weingarts, everything from lawn to snow.
Hi, it's Dan Weingarts. Stay ahead of winter storms with one of our in-stock Toro snowblowers. Toro snowblowers are strong and reliable and clear down to the pavement. And with prices starting at just $359, we have a Toro to fit every budget. For more information, visit Weingarts.com or our stores in Utica, Farmington Hills, Cedar Springs, Clarkston, and Ann Arbor.
Weingarts.
Now, in the Ave Maria online store, two brilliant talks on Advent by Father John Ricardo. In the mystery of Advent, Father John dives into Scripture to regain the wonder we should experience during this season. In Advent Confession, Father John helps us prepare for the Nativity of the Lord through the story of the prodigal son. Order both talks now by going to AveMariaRadio.net and clicking on Advent Talks under the store tab. It's a great gift that will help you and your loved ones enter into the mystery and mercy of Advent.
Cresta in the Afternoon is brought to you in part with the generous support of MonasteryGreetings.com. MonasteryGreetings.com features hundreds of food and gifts made by abbeys, convents, and monasteries. Fruitcakes, jams and jellies, cakes and cookies, coffee, tea and honey, chocolate and fudge, all from monks and nuns. MonasteryGreetings.com also has a selection of jewelry, candles, soap, and body care items.